welcome to a special fundraising week edition of Vital Voices. Our guest today is Scott Simon, the host of NPR's Weekend Edition Saturday. Scott Simon is the author of a new book, just published this month. It's entitled Ulysses S. Cat and Other Animals I Have Known. Scott Simon joins us from his home in Washington, D.C.
Scott Simon, this is such an endearing book. It's full of every possible human and animal emotion. I love being able to enter your world and didn't want to leave it. Congratulations.
Thank you. That's so nice of you, Fred. Thank you very much.
This book tells of several adorable dogs and cats, but before we discuss them, let's talk about worms. How did your family come to own about 1,000 worms, and what happens in their bin on the balcony of your apartment?
Well, the worms are called the Slimans, so named by our oldest daughter. And my wife wanted to get a worm bin. I thought this would be good for the environment, and we put leftovers in there, you know, scraps of food and newspaper and paper and that sort of thing. And I guess it's doing something good for the environment. They're can I say poo on WETS?
Well, absolutely.
Yeah, the worm poo is added over the what we grow on the balcony, which are a combination of flowers and herbs. And we have about 1,000 worms, and each of them are named after a local public station. I will make certain, by the way, when we're done with this interview, of going outside and checking on WETS.
Well, that was my next question. We would be honored to have one of your worms named for our public radio station.
Please count on it. WETS Simon, by all means. We needed a lot of names, and what could be better than local public radio stations, particularly at this time?
Yes.
So they sometimes taunt me, the worms, because I'll say, "Oh, you don't have any legs and you're slimy." And they'll say, "Yeah, but what do you do for the environment?" You know, they're a little petulant.
All right, let's move now to more predictable pets or animals. Yeah. And I love your term running mates, by the way. I don't like pet owner. Running mates is perfect. Take us back to your childhood and tell us about your first dog, the German Shepherd named Penny, who was owned by your parents, I think, before you came along.
Absolutely. And they when my mother was expecting me, they notably took Penny to an Italian restaurant because they didn't want to leave her at home. They thought she couldn't take the loneliness. And, of course, the restaurant it's not France. They don't permit dogs, particularly rambunctious German shepherds. And my father took out a pair of sunglasses and slipped them to my mother and said, "Here, put this on." Yeah. So without quite saying, she presented herself as not sighted, as blind. But, of course, Penny did not behave like a well-trained guide dog. And within a few minutes, she was leaping after some of the trays of cannoli and that sort of thing. And finally, the owner came over and said, you're not really blind, are you? But everybody in the restaurant was going, "Hey, come on, let the dog stay." Penny was the first face that belonged to a member of the family that I probably reached up to touch. She would hover over my crib. She would be with me as I napped. She would respond to my cries. She would respond to me. She really fixed herself on me. I think I probably learned to walk or learned to stand because I was reaching up to be able to hug Penny around her neck from the floor. And she was just a remarkable gift to our family. And there was something, I don't want to say appropriate, but when my late grandmother left this earth by her own hand, it was Penny who discovered her and accompanied her out of the apartment as the police van took her away.
There are some dramatic scenes in this book. For example, Gato Blanco, your cat, almost falling out the window. And there are also some very quiet ones, too. Talk about some of the quiet rituals that you have with, for example, Daisy, your French poodle, and Gato Blanco, the cat.
Well, you know, they dictate in many ways the day from the moment, or at least the order of the day, because just about the first thing we have to do is take Daisy for a walk for all the obvious reasons. We have to make certain that Gato Blanco is fed. One story that I relate in the book that I never quite forget, I never will. When our daughters were young, we had a little orange British cat named Leona, and she made herself responsible for making certain that we all went to sleep. We would bring our youngest, Paulina, into her bedroom, and Leona would curl up with her until Paulina found sleep. And then, like half hour, an hour later, we would bring our oldest daughter, Elise, into her bedroom, and Leona would curl up with her. I mean, right up with her, right next to her, until she went asleep. And then Leona would come out into the living room, and she would sit with me and my wife, Caroline, as we read or as we watched something together. And then she would sort of like, stretch and announce it was time for bed. And we would pick her up in our arms, and we would take her off to her bedroom. And yes, she became part of our nighttime ritual. And I think she very much viewed it as her responsibility to make certain we were all settled down for the night. I will say, write about this in the book, that for years she and I had a certain routine. She would get hungry in the middle of the night, and she would stick her scratchy little tongue into my eye just very softly to wake me up. And I would carry her into the kitchen, and I would put, treats into her bowl. And that was our routine. When I traveled, she never did that to Caroline, my wife. It was only me. And a few years ago, I remember interviewing Arianna Huffington, who was writing about, at that point, the importance of sleep. And she said, we shouldn't be interrupted in the middle of our sleep. And I told her about Leona, and Arianna Huffington said, oh, well, that is different, of course.
You're right that bringing animals into our lives graces us with extraordinary moments that bring us to see how much we can mean to each other. Tell me about a couple more of those extraordinary moments.
Well, I think I certainly noticed that during the siege of Sarajevo. One of the things that I grew to love so much about the city is that the people in Sarajevo would share their own meager relief supplies with their pets, their cats, their dogs, their hamsters, their parents, to keep them going. They would risk their safety, their lives, to walk their dogs during the siege of Sarajevo because there was so much sniper fire. And I talk, in fact, about coming under sniper fire with our engineer, Manolita Wetherell, as we were doing a story about that. And it was because, to come back to that phrase, running mates, their animals were members of the family. They were their running mates through lives. And they were not going to throw them over. They weren't going to abandon them. They felt that keeping their animals in their lives, sacrificing for them, helping them along in life, was keeping the fire of humanity going during very inhumane times.
Animals die in this book. Your hamster Bagel, for example. Several animals in the book die. How do you think animals view or approach death? And how can we learn from their way of thinking?
Obviously, I don't know, but I think from the way, because I have accompanied a few animals of ours in their last moments, and we did a story with a veterinarian that was necessary too. I think their acceptance of us indicates to us that they see it as the next step. Yeah. It's the next theater of experience ahead. And maybe we can all benefit from thinking about that.
Last question. How did getting these stories down on paper deepen your appreciation for the animals and the humans in your life?
Well, because you have to run them through your heart and mind and ask what they have meant and meant to you, and what you've learned from them and what you take of them as we go on through life. And this entire collection of animals and animal lovers have reminded me of the many blessings I've had in life with so many people to love and so many, many animals who are part of that experience too. And I think it's important to have these occasions in life when when we can celebrate the simple joys of love and companionship.
Scott Simon, congratulations on the publication of Ulysses S. Cat and Other Animals I Have Known, and thank you for joining us for Vital Voices.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you so much, Fred.
Thanks, Scott. Good to talk to you.
Ulysses S. Cat and Other Animals I Have Known is published by W.W. Norton and Company. This is a special fundraising week edition of Vital Voices. We are living through a pivotal moment for the Tri-Cities region. As you likely know, federal funding for public media was cut by Congress last summer. That loss is now a reality that we face every single day going forward. WETS serves as a civic anchor. We give you the facts you need to vote, to understand local policy, and to engage with your neighbors. This work is funded 100% by our local community, now and for as far as we can see into the future. Your monthly gift will ensure that our newsroom stays open and our reporters stay on the stories that matter to you. Please join the listeners who are stepping up to secure our future by visiting us at WETS.org, where you can make your contribution quickly, safely, and easily. And we thank you.
Whether you listen for a few minutes a day or a few hours, whether you listen for hard news or something a little lighter, when you listen to NPR and WETS, you trust us to be a part of your day, to deliver news and information that's important to you. Hi, I'm Scott Simon from Weekend Edition. Please help WETS continue to be the source that you can count on. Visit WETS.org today to become a sustaining member for the very first time, or if you've given before, you might consider increasing your gift. Now more than ever, we need your help, so thank you.
When Hurricane Helene decimated East Tennessee, Western North Carolina, and surrounding areas in the fall of 2024, this station, WETS, was the only source of information for a lot of people. Listeners have told us how WETS was their lifeline, providing critical information on road closures, power outages, and the availability of food and water as the region recovered from the storm. The hurricane struck at the very heart of our listening area. The stories we heard were painful, but they were also uplifting. While WETS provided essential information for survival, it also provided hope. It continues to do so today. This station has been a source of enlightenment and entertainment for over 50 years. It, too, is a survivor, overcoming budget cuts and staff reductions over the years to make sure that listeners continue to have access to its valuable programming. If this station's mission and its service are valuable to you, we ask that you take a moment to make a financial contribution. It's easy and quick and can be done by visiting WETS.org. And thank you.
I'm Tanya Mosley, co-host of Fresh Air. The Appalachian region is vast and complex. Its economies are changing, and its demographics are shifting. For over 50 years, WETS has helped you understand this fascinating part of America. From environmental issues to education to healthcare, WETS covers the depth and breadth of the Appalachian area with knowledge and sensitivity. This type of coverage not only takes insight, it takes resources. And that's where you come in. By contributing financially to WETS, you're making a bold statement, underscoring the value of this service to the Appalachian region and beyond. Think about the place this station occupies in your life. Think about the perspective it brings to the issues of the day. Think about the joy it gives you. Then consider contributing in any amount to support the mission of regional service for which this station is known. Give today at WETS.org. And thank you.
This is a special fundraising week edition of Vital Voices. Today, we are asking for your financial support because federal funding for public radio is gone forever. starting your monthly gift is the only way forward. We believe the truth should be a public good, accessible to everyone regardless of their ability to contribute. We don't have paywalls, but we do have bills. You count on us every day, and we are counting on you today for a little bit of the money that it takes to bring you the stories that matter to you, the stories that inform and enlighten our whole community, to keep the truth free for all of us in this region. We need those who can give to step up now. Start your monthly gift by visiting us at WETS.org, and we thank you.
I'm Giles Snyder. For more than 52 years, WETS has been a source of knowledge, entertainment, and information for people throughout the Appalachian region and beyond. The station has played a crucial role in interpreting and understanding life in East Tennessee, Southwest Virginia, Western North Carolina, and Eastern Kentucky, and how those regions fit into a global context. The regions served by this station are ever-changing, but for more than half a century, WETS has been a constant. The station has survived challenging conditions with the help of its listeners. Whether you're new here or you follow WETS from the beginning, we're grateful for your loyalty. Now's the time when we ask you to underscore that loyalty with a financial contribution in any amount that fits your budget. Give now by visiting WETS.org, and we thank you.
From the economy to local development, the world feels increasingly complex. WETS is your guide through all the noise. Our mission has not changed, but our funding has. Without federal dollars, we are now a community-supported newsroom. Help us keep delivering independent journalism for our whole community by visiting us now at WETS.org, and we thank you. And we thank our guest today, NPR's Scott Simon, author of the brand new book, Ulysses S. Cat and Other Animals I Have Known. For Vital Voices, I'm Fred Sausman.